This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Now, let's go back in time. Imagine a Kansas City covered by ice sheets and oceans that ebb and flow, and lush rainforests with soaring ferns and palm trees, home to dragonflies with 4 feet wingspans. This was Kansas City eons ago, according to Richard Gentile, who is a geosciences professor emeritus at UMKC. He's curator of the exhibit Kansas City Millions of Years Ago, Reading the Rock, at Commerce Bank's Box Gallery. Susan caught up with Gentile there amid the fossils and illustrations of Kansas City long, long ago. Richard Gentile told her how he became interested in fossils.
Well, it began when I was a child. We lived over in St. Louis County, and I went to a circus, and they had on display the man who was turning to stone. This fellow was lying in a sort of a coffin-like box there, and all he had on was a pair of trunks, but he was just as white as a sheet. Evidently, they had covered him with talcum powder. But he was turning to stone. Now, they never did really tell you how that was happening. Maybe it was something he was eating, I don't know. But anyway, I was about 6 years old, and that fascinated me. So I decided I wanted to make a fossil, just like this fellow who was becoming a fossil. So I got an apple and a potato, and I climbed up in a tree, and I put it in the fork of the tree. And I came back a few days later, climbed up the tree, and I thought, well, I'm going to find a petrified apple and a potato. But, of course, the birds had pecked holes in it, so I was a little bit discouraged. So I went to my father, and I asked him, well, Dad, how do I make a fossil? Well, he looked at me kind of oddly, just as to say, boy, I have a weird little kid here. But he says, oh, he said, fossils are found in caves. Well, there was a cave about a quarter of a mile from our house. It was in a limestone bluff there, and of course it went back about 75 feet. So I went back into the cave. I took another apple and a potato, and I put it way back in the cave. Came back a couple of weeks later expecting to find my apple and potato petrified, but of course the little cave animals had eaten it, and there was nothing left there but shards of the apple and the potato, so I was pretty discouraged. But then I read somewhere that fossils are dug up out of the earth. So there was a small stream back of our house, and it sort of had a sand bottom. So I went there, and I dug a hole there in the bottom of the creek there, and I buried my apple and potato. Oh, I came back the next, that was in the fall, I came back the next spring, and I must have dug up that whole creek for 100 feet looking for my apple and potato, but evidently it wasn't the right environment, and of course it probably rotted away, so I was pretty discouraged, and of course, but I have always been interested in geological problems here.
So just generally, and we're going to walk around in a minute, but just generally, what about the Kansas City area made it a good place for fossils and other things to develop?
Well, what we're trying to do here in the Box Gallery is to recreate the geologic history of the greater Kansas City area as seen in the rock record. We're interested in the surface rocks. These are the rocks that you see as you drive along the major highways, and of course they're in layers. And those rocks go back about 300 million years now. That was a time when vast seas covered the interior of the North American continent. And, of course, there were various types of life living in those seas. Most of them were invertebrates. There were some strange-looking fishes. And then, of course, those seas, at times they retreated. And following the seas westward were vast rainforests. And we were on near the equator then, maybe 5 degrees from the equator. And, of course, these vast rainforests, some people call them coal forests because much of the vegetation gave, by altering geologic processes, they became beds of coal. But anyway, these vast rainforests, they left behind a lot of fossil, different types of trees and leaves. Now, we've collected those.
Now, let me ask you, right where we're sitting here, like 10th and Walnut, That was kind of a hotbed of geological creation, wasn't it?
Well, if you want to walk over here, I'll show you a I'll show you a diorama that was created by our illustrator John Babcrock. This diorama here on the wall. It of course it's the excavation for a large building in 1889. We're at the corner of 11th and Grand Avenue. Now back in those days, they excavated basements with picks and shovels, and of course they didn't have modern day equipment, and they did it at a rather slow pace. Well, they got down several feet, and they hit a bed of shale, only about 6 inches thick, that contained a excellently preserved group of fossil organisms that once lived in those seas. Now, they collected about 700 slabs with those particular fossils in them. Now, most of them were mostly covered by the surrounding matrix, but of course they didn't have much to do in Kansas City in 1889. There was no radios or TVs, and so they would spend the entire winter there with a needle and a brush removing the matrix around the specimens and bringing them out in relief. Now, they did that to about 400 of those particular slabs, and they're in an excellent state of preservation. And
now, what did they actually find there?
The main organism that they found there, the main invertebrate, is called a crinoid. Now, crinoids, some people call them sea lilies, but they have nothing to do with plants. They're invertebrate organisms. They're closely related to starfishes, sea urchins, and sand dollars. If you take a starfish and turn it upside down and put a stem on it, which is rooting the specimen to the seafloor, you have a crinoid. And those are very elaborate creatures. They're composed of hundreds of little plates. And usually, whenever they die, the plates fall apart, and they're, of course, many times they're broken up by predators or waves, but in this particular case, Kansas City must have been an exceptional environment back when these seas covered the area about 300 million years ago. It was probably a shallow lagoon with an excellent environment for preservation. Sediments like clay was coming in. It rapidly covered these particular creatures as they settled to the bottom, preserving them from oxygen, bacterial decay, and predators. So we had a very excellent type of environment here for the preservation of these organisms. Now, this one here on the wall is called Asiocrinus magnificus, and of course it is a magnificent specimen. It's in the Smithsonian. But our specimens have been found their way into museums and collections throughout the eastern United States and Europe.
But wasn't there one, and I'm not sure it was at this location, that you discovered and named?
Well, let's see. Over here we have a crinoid, which is called Delocrinus missouriensis. And, of course, that is the fossil which the state fossil is based on.
Now, it became the state fossil because of some school children, right?
Well, right. Here we have another photograph here, which is taken in about 1989 here. It shows the then Governor Ashcoff signing the bill that made the fossil, the Delocrinus missouriensis, the state fossil.
So this sea that you say covered Kansas City at the time, did the sea have a name at that time?
Well, we call it the Cherokee Sea, but that's just local. Actually, the seas probably entered where West Texas is to now, and then they transgressed eastward across the interior of the North American continent to the foot of the rising Appalachian Mountains. But they covered the entire mid-continent, which was near sea level. And, of course, if the if sea level was raised by a few hundred feet, well, then that sea would pulsate hundreds of miles across the interior of the continent. And if the sea level dropped by 400 or 500 feet, then the sea would retreat. And for a while, Kansas City may have been on a shoreline of a retreating sea. And then following that sea westward was a vast rainforest, like you see in this other diorama here, which had on it a lot of strange-looking plants. Most of these were trees back in those days that stood some of them over 100 feet high. such as this one here. It had a bark on it that resembled a snake skin. Now, they find those sometimes in mines, coal miners, of course. As they're mining coal, they'll find a particular specimen like that. They think it's a fossilized snake, but it isn't. It's part of one of the barks of what we call a scale tree or a lepidodendron tree.
This is a pretty large, it looks like a dragonfly almost, but a very large-sized dragonfly that would have lived in this area.
Well, that is some of the types. And now, see, you're going back a long time. The dinosaurs were still 50 million years in the future. We had no real flowering plants then. And, of course, no mammals. Now, that dragonfly there, it had a wingspan of about 18 inches. And actually, a fellow the other day sent me a specimen, or at least a photograph of a specimen that they'd found in a wall down in Lee Summit. And so it was probably around here. And so they probably, that particular block of the building stone there probably came from a quarry near here, but we don't know that for sure. But you see also the first reptiles we find in rocks near Garner, Kansas. Those were about the size of a lizard. Of course, this one here in our diorama is eating a large cockroach. Some of those were 4 inches long, but cockroaches have been around for millions of years.
They seem to be the ultimate survivors, don't they?
Well, of course, they've found hundreds of different species in most of these eastern beds of rock over here. But one of the interesting trees there is a fern tree. And some of those got to be 40, 50 feet high. Now, notice at the end of one of the fronds is a seed. That is the first seed, and that particular seed from a fern tree gave rise to all of the flowering plants of today. We have a specimen of it here in the case.
You have like a cross-section here of a Missouri River bluff, and it looks like there's all different types of limestone. What's the significance of the different types?
In this particular photograph here, we have two different rock types. Those are the major rock types in Kansas City. One of them is limestone, which forms a ledge. It's usually light-colored. And then, of course, the rock directly underlying it in this photograph is shale. Now, those particular couplets, limestone and shale, are repeated again and again and again throughout the greater Kansas City area. Now, the significance of those particular beds is that the limestone contains the marine fossils we've been talking about, and the shale beds will have at least within them a zone of plant fossils. So what we're seeing here is we're reconstructing the environment in which those beds were laid down. Now, limestone is formed usually from different types of shells and spines in that, of course, which accumulated on the seafloor. And then, of course, through geologic processes, they were turned into an homogeneous-looking limestone. Now, some limestones may, of course, be a chemical precipitate, but the limestones are marine. And the shale beds were either non-marine or very near shore, like a lagoon or a similar type of environment. So what we're seeing here, as you drive along the highways and you look at a bed of limestone, which usually forms the ledge, and the shale usually forms the slope, we're seeing the transgression and regression of seas across the interior of the North American continent is what we're looking at here. And that, of course, we believe that each transgression and regression took from 250 to 400,000 years. So you're dealing with a lot of time here. And in places, we've recorded at least 10 or 20 of these transgressions that are preserved in the rock layers as you drive along the highways.
Now, speaking of driving along on Highway 210 or North Kansas City, it looks like there's some windblown silt against the rocks there. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, let's see, if we're going to talk about that, we're going to have to move up in time here. Now, you see, what we've been talking about up until now is the various types of environments and rocks that were formed during the Pennsylvanian period about 300 million years ago. Now, the next group of rocks that are exposed in the greater Kansas City belong to the so-called Pleistocene epoch. We're moving up in time from 300 million years ago to less than a million years ago. Now, I've been asked by a lot of people, well, can we find dinosaur fossils in the greater Kansas City area? Well, I have to disappoint him and say no, because the interval of time that dinosaurs lived from about 225 million years ago to about 65 million years ago, the so-called Mesozoic era, we don't have any rocks here of that particular age. If they ever were here, they were eroded away. Most likely dinosaurs roamed throughout the greater Kansas City, and their skeletal remains were preserved in the rocks, but of course those rocks have been eroded away. So if you want to hunt dinosaur fossils, you got to go out in Colorado where those particular rocks are preserved. So notice on this geologic time scale here, from about the Pennsylvanian period, 300 million years ago, to less than only about 2 million years ago, we don't have any record, because those rocks, if they ever were laid down, they have been eroded away. So the Pleistocene are the so-called Great Ice Age rocks, and that, of course, is glacial drift, is resting right on top of the Pennsylvanian rocks here. And so now we're moving up from a time when it was mostly invertebrates until we get into the age of mammals. Now on this wall over here, and in this case, we have a diorama here of what it looked like during the Great Ice Age. This illustration shows us a herd of Columbian mammoths crossing the Kansas River near Bonner Springs. Now one of the major collecting sites for the skeletal remains of these Ice Age mammals, things like bears and beavers and sloths and that, are found in the Kansas River on sandbars. It seems that must have been a place where they could ford across. But notice here in this diorama, one of the very young mammoths is caught in a current, and probably it will drown, and then its skeletal remains will, of course, become entombed in the sandbars in the river, and some lucky fossil hunter will probably be able to find him, make a major find there.
So, kind of in conclusion, what would you want people to know about our Kansas City area in terms of a place where the geology and paleontology is alive and well, it seems?
Well, as I say, everything we know about what happened in the geologic past, we read from the rock records, so you have to get out and read the rocks. Now, see, I could probably tell you of several places where you could go to find fossils, but most likely they've pretty well been picked over. There's been a lot of people out there looking. My advice to any fossil hunter who wants to see what life was like back in the, back many years ago, drive along the highways or the roads and then find yourself an exposure of rocks, especially where there are layers, limestone and shale. The limestone will be like in ledges and the shale will form the slopes. And then it can be pretty well weathered. The more ratty looking or weathered looking is probably the better, and then find a place to park, and especially if there hasn't been anybody there in a long while, you can probably look over that outcrop and find some of the types of specimens that we see here in the cases.
UMKC Geosciences Professor Emeritus Richard Dentow is curator of the exhibit Kansas City Millions of Years Ago, Reading the Rock, on display at the Commerce Bank Box Gallery through May 31st.
After the break, three generations of poets reflect on motherhood and Puerto Rican culture. This is Casey Currents.